Can you introduce yourself as well as the coalition, why you do the work that you do, and why you decided to do this podcast, and what you and what your goals are with it? So a few different questions there, but if you can speak to some of that, introduce yourself and the coalition and your work and your goals.
I'm with the Coalition for Justice and Human Rights. We are a group of like-minded people that use the platform that we created to do meaningful advocacy and human rights work. And I say meaningful because what you find, or at least what we find, is that agencies, nonprofits, even government systems like the Child and Youth Advocates Office, if they're funded by government, then, or have indirect funding by government, then there's always a certain amount of pressure and political correctness associated with advocacy and support of the people that are very vulnerable. And that in itself can be very problematic. And so the coalition, as we have no government funding, we don't take government funding, and we are a free service. So that leaves a challenge. So the coalition, and I guess I'm answering the questions backwards to forward. So the coalition relies on donations, and that's how I survive. And part of the reason I'm doing on the podcast is so that people are aware of the work, and maybe they might feel, a need to, or I shouldn't say a need, but a willingness to support our work at the coalition, and or specifically my work, and to fight the good fight for those that are very vulnerable.
Hello, my name is Kevin. Welcome to the inaugural episode of the Mark Charrington podcast. Join us as we discuss Mark's passionate work, which centers around the most vulnerable people in our communities and focuses on justice, human rights, and homelessness, among other topics. Starting off, Mark unveils the heart of his mission and why he does what he does, tracing the genesis of the Coalition for Justice and Human Rights and its unwavering commitment to impactful advocacy. Throughout our conversation, Mark shines a spotlight on the fundamental value of dignity. We discuss the real-life struggles of some people he has helped and continues to help. From a mother navigating child welfare to a woman struggling to get income support after a job-related injury. But this podcast isn't just about stories. It's a call to action. Mark fearlessly critiques the failings of systems and institutions, demanding empathy and accountability. Listen as Mark shares the poignant challenges faced by those on society's fringes. Learn how you can make a difference, whether through essential donations or by attending his upcoming fundraising gala dinner on May 2nd at the River Creek Casino. Join Mark as we build awareness and support for the people in society who need it most. We'll do it one story at a time in this podcast and episodes going forward, and he'll give us incredible insight into the work he's been doing for 30 years, including the journey of a pregnant teenager battling stigma and isolation. An important reminder of the heartbreaking and devastating situations some people in our society face. I'll take a moment to introduce myself here. My name is Kevin. I currently live in Red Deer, Alberta, and I operate a home-based business called KevinTheTechGuy.ca. I offer free and paid subscriber content, including blog posts, quick tips, how-to guides, remote support, my newsletter, and my Kevin Talks Tech podcast, in which Mark was an early guest on. I always talk to interesting people, people who fascinate me. Mark is one of those people. I also offer early access to my content, the newsletter, a free version, as well as the paid version that come later on, and the content on my website. I also offer early access to my Patreon subscribers. I spend some of my time volunteering for Mark, doing honestly anything I can for him. This includes remote IT work related to his laptop, such as the initial system cleanup I did for him, and the monthly tune-ups that have followed, generally monthly. So that's Windows updates, that's program updates, basic system maintenance, tune-up, and just checking to make sure things are running smoothly for him because he depends on that laptop. I also help put together his free newsletter. and now this podcast as well. So that's a bit about me and what I do and how I help Mark.
I make sure that any person that I work with understands that we're free, and that doesn't a vulnerable person you doesn't mean you many times have no means, but a vulnerable person is in crisis. And if people, some of the people that we help, if they ever want to make a donation, that's fine, but we don't even mention it.
So if I can just jump in for a second. So hopefully people are aware of the work that you do, because again, your wonderful, insightful posts on social media. What does the coalition itself do?
So the coalition works again in the area of human rights, dignity, and access to justice. Those would be the three main pillars. So human rights can mean a lot of things to a lot of people. And then there's basic human rights, such as access to shelter, food, but then there's indigenous rights, which we pu you put in, you can put in within human rights, you can rights of the child, persons with disabilities. So people have different rights and different protections depending on what their personal situation is. But instead of saying this and this and this, it's just human rights. Dignity, of course, is a very broad sort of a word, but it can mean a lot of things to a lot of different people. But my definition, and I think the coalition's definition of dignity, is being treated the way you'd want to treat others, or treating others the way you'd want to be treated, I should say. And that's a good measuring stick, and it worked since I was 5 or 6 years old, and so we stick with it.
For the coalition, if I could take a step back for a moment, Mark, what brought the coalition together?
It's a situation where I think, at least from my perspective, and I can answer best from my situation.
Sure.
I used to work for Legal Aid Alberta. I used to work for a great law firm called the Youth Criminal Defense Firm Office, Youth Criminal Defense Office, and it was founded in 1993. Around 2013, 2014, it was starting to change, and it was changing because Legal Aid Alberta, which is again, publicly funded by the Alberta government, was starting to feel pressured about some of the work that we were doing at the youth office, and in particular, what I was doing, because I was doing what I've always done, social justice advocacy and support. And I was really pushing back on government's policies and that. And Legal Aid around 2013, 2014 started to become very nervous about that. And so I saw, I wouldn't say I saw the writing on the wall, but I was starting to appreciate that what I was doing was very, had a shelf life at Legal Aid. And so I and a couple of other people decided to create a platform, and that being the Coalition for Justice and Human Rights, where we could volunteer our time beyond our work or use it exclusively to maintain hardcore human rights and advocacy. Some people would call it activism. I don't. So yeah, we got together at I think it was a Denny's or a Smitty's or something,
As one does.
and penned this program together. And we registered it as a nonprofit, and then and now we're a federally registered charity.
And now you're a
And
federally registered charity. Okay.
And I don't say who's in the coalition.
Okay.
I think it's up to other people, because some people use the coalition as a bat cave, right? As a secret. They work behind the scenes anonymously, or because there are other sort of careers or choices or lifestyles or whatever might put them at the crosshairs of government, or for who they work for. So their employers or things like that. I'm probably the most visible person within the coalition,
Right.
but that's not to say that A, I'm not the only one on the coalition. I'm certainly not the one that's doing the most important work.
Okay.
Everybody's doing very valuable work. For example, the encampments that we had a big issue recently with encampments, homelessness and encampments. I wasn't involved in that hardly at all. There was other people that were steering that, and from the coalition.
You're a busy man.
I know.
Lots going on. Oh my goodness gracious. Thank you for agreeing to do these podcast episodes. I really think, truly and honestly, that people are going to it's they're going to be received really well, and people are going to it's going to help people better understand and gain better insights into the work that you do and the people that you help beyond what you're sharing on social media and your occasional kind of Instagram videos. We won't go on for hours, even though we probably could. We won't. Getting into some of those stories, or at least what you're willing to share, what you can share, and get people to sit up and pay attention and kind of catch their ear as to, oh my goodness, okay, this is what Mark does. This is what it's all about. This is why I really need to donate.
No, that's an important aspect of it because, like I said, I don't have any funding streams other than community. And I know I'm starting a podcast in a month or 2 months or whenever with the law firm that I'm working with, but that will just be on social justice issues and legal issues, how they entwine with each other, that not so much fundraising or talking day-to-day stuff. Be even more busier.
Yes, I don't know how you're going to do all of what you're doing and this and that, but you seem to find a way.
Yeah, but so we're looking at a podcast every 2 weeks. Is that what we're
If
looking
you
at?
That's the aim, that's the goal.
2 or 3 weeks, or that would be, I could do
It
that.
it's what you can do. I can't force you to do anything, Mark.
I know that. Yeah, no, I'm well aware of my rights, but yeah, I'm just trying to think
And
of,
honestly, as often as you can do it, like I say, you've to I almost feel like it's kind of beaten to death the concept of it, but you've been at this for 30 years.
Yeah,
So there are
no.
plenty of things you can talk about. God knows the threads are on Twitter. You've got a lot to say. You've got opinions and insights and just really great perspective. I'm preaching to the choir here, but it's very true. And yeah, as often as you can do this, like I say, every 2, 3 weeks roughly, and then I'll create a transcript to put together the show notes, links and all, if there are any to speak of. And yeah, just bringing attention to what you do and obviously what the coalition does to help the people that need help. Anything we can do in that regard to bring attention to it is truly the goal. And so this will be released as a video podcast as well as an audio podcast.
Oh, good.
Because I tend depends what people are in the mood for, what they're doing in their day, walking the dog, driving the car, sitting on their couch, whatever it is, they could pull up the YouTube app or Pocket Cast on the phone, as I tend to do, and have a listen or watch it almost like TV, I suppose, without the drama. Pretending that somebody has never met you, or they just it's the first episode, right? It's a good time to introduce yourself and the coalition, why you do the work that you do. Why you decided to do this podcast and what you wanted to focus on, what your goals are with this with these podcast episodes. I'd also be curious if there's anything specific that you'd like to mention aside from the examples, the stuff that you bring up in your tweets. Anything that jumps to mind. I know there's the gala coming up. We'll talk about that. That's in my notes, obviously, where people can find what you're posting. So we'll mention Twitter, Threads, Mastodon, the free newsletter, anything. But yeah, just anything comes to mind. Okay. Alrighty. How's your day been, Mark?
Good. My day has been, whole week's been rather busy, but today has been a bit slower, and that's because I slowed it down a bit. I helped a lady who's had her 3 children apprehended, and that case is really complex and a lot of emotion, as is any app child welfare apprehension. And some of the cases that I work with child welfare and apprehensions was pretty clear cut. The parent or parents are, I should say, parent or parents, the guardian or guardians, which are many time parents, usually in the dry cut ones, they have really significant underlying issues that cause child welfare to be really concerned about the children's safety, and they act, and it's pretty straightforward. But in a case like this that I'm working with today, it's a sense of where the father has been in the past charged with sexually assaulting the children or child, I'm not sure, one or more. And there's a big concern about that. But I think because the family is separated, the mother, the two partners have separated. But child welfare, I think, is treating the whole thing as a single entity in a totalitarian sort of way of one instead of two different families. And so the mother is suffering, I thought, quite a bit more than she should be. And I'm really hard pressed to find what the underlying issues are with mom that would make child welfare apprehend the children. I could see with the dad, but not with the mom. So that's the case I'm working on. I spent a lot of time today. And then the others, I also worked with a lady who had a significant injury at work, but her WCB is running out. And now I'm trying to get her onto income support. And there's a lot of adjustments and quite a change in her financial situation. So that's causing a lot of challenges. She has to make some hard choices. And then I was just working on just driving somebody from their apartment to the bottle depot and then back to their apartment, and then just picking up some over-the-counter medication for a small child with another family. So that was just my day.
You're so modest.
Although that's pretty typical of a day, actually. It's yesterday I
Just
was.
this, just that.
Yeah, no, it's always an interesting day. And
Mean,
I'm like a first responder, let's say. A first responder comes, deals with the crisis, and leaves. Somebody in support work or social justice advocacy or youth work, they maintain an ongoing relationship with the family. And I do a bit of both. Obviously, I'm not like a first responder, but I come into a situation that's very much a crisis. I defuse the crisis. I try to provide that immediate support and help. Usually, that's financial or that's an area involving some sort of advocacy, something like that. And but then I maintain a relationship with the client or the person, and that can last for years, if not decades. So it's a situation that just maintains a level of interaction that I don't think you find with first responders or with support advocates and youth workers and that, because again, from start to finish. And I only know of a few people in the city that kind of do that sort of model that I'm doing right now. I could never have done this 10, 15, 20, 25, even 30 years ago, obviously, because it's a skill set and I've
You mean
learned that skill set over.
you mean in the same way? Because obviously you were helping people 30 years ago.
Yeah, but not in the same way, because again, it's a skill set. It's a skill set in the sense that you're developing new understandings and philosophies, and the systems are changing and have changed significantly, where it's become so bare bones that I don't know if you really needed somebody like me, what I'm doing today, 30 years ago. You had peripheral supports where, let's say, for your income support. The income support workers would go to people's houses. They would work individually with clients for generations, families. Obviously, now it's just a big call center. So systems have been weeded and shredded, and a lot of it having to do with this current government, the UCP government. And that makes more of an enhanced need from people like me, if that makes sense.
Volunteers, no less.
So again, that's just an example of where we have many different tentacles.
Yeah, the non pro the pro bono lawyer, I think is how you say his name.
Nada, Avnish Nada, yeah. And Chris Weeb, who's with Tom Engle's firm, which is a law firm that's well known for its work against police that are use excessive force and things like that.
I mentioned the encampments, but and I know you weren't involved in that work, that case, certainly not to a large extent, if at all. But you did make some comments, and of course, the newsletter, which I do help you with that. And you did, and I love the fact that you put together those comments, which were mostly taken from tweets and so forth, to maybe help people better understand what was going on outside of what the media could say or has been saying. But what kind of struck me, in particular to the case, is I loved how Avnish and others, there's a particular group photo that comes to mind. I'm not sure, something to do with they're working on the case, or they're all happy, smiling faces and all proud to be there working on this. So that was wonderful to see. And I appreciated that. I know many others did as well. But I will say that the encampments, I want to say issue, not to downplay it at all, I think really brought more a great deal of attention to the coalition and, of course, to yourself. And I'm curious. So I think that there's not to make light of the encampment, but I think that was of some benefit to you to at least.
Yeah, I think it was. I think what it did was it put a spotlight on us
Yeah.
and did a number of things. It gave us an opportunity to explain who we are and what we do,
Yeah.
and not through just talk, but through actions.
Yeah.
It's not every day that you get called an activist and by a cabinet minister. And I'm sure I've been called different other things by police chiefs and things like that. But it also showed, more importantly, that there's the official message, which was the message of the police, and there was a reality. And the reality that I saw and I experienced was talking to people in these encampments was originally the police would just walk down an aisle of the encampments with box cutters and slice open tents in minus 30 degree weather. That's how they were evicting people and tossing all their stuff, cell phones, home clothing,
All the belongings, yeah.
food containers into a back of a sanitation truck and off to the dump it went. And we were able to get an injunction, and the police had to, at least from my perspective, the police had to adjust their way of dealing with the homeless significantly in a significant different way. And again, you put the word dignity back into this, and you put the word human rights back into this. But that's just a sort of a high profile incident or issue that, quite frankly, many of us within the coalition deal with different examples of that sort of scenario daily.
On an individual basis, you're saying.
Yeah, and systemic. It's not, we're not standing on the corner selling newspapers. So we're not sitting there telling people what we're doing, and we leave that to the people that are involved in this, the people that we're helping to decide whether they're going to involve the media or not, or the fifth pillar, as I call it. The only sort of media that I do is my own social media. But there's many issues and many problems and many success stories that aren't don't never see the light of day in the area of other people knowing about it, other than the people that were assisting on that particular issue. And again, it's not up to us to wave the red flag. And I might speak generally of an issue on Twitter or X or whatever the hell you call it now, or on another media platform, but I don't.
Your focus is on your day-to-day work, because God knows you're busy enough.
Yeah, there's some things coming around the horizon that I can't talk about now. But I think when it comes out, people are going to be rather shocked.
As they should be.
The issue itself will, I think, will shock them and what's happening. But whether they should be or not,
But
that
I think
will
in
be the
general, like
after story.
we talk about the encampments and the various issues, not to generalize, but you bring up specific things, and we'll talk about that in a moment with some of your specific tweets of the individuals that you're helping and the circumstances and situations and horrible situations in some cases that make people cringe, right?
Yeah.
And it's a matter of, do we look at it? I mean, people have lives, what have you, and that's legitimate. We got to work, we got to eat, we got to take care of our families, et cetera, take care of our communities. This stuff is happening. And it's very real, particularly to the people who are living it. But to use your term, to put a spotlight on it, to bring attention to what these people are experiencing and how you're helping them, how you're advocating for them, whether it's getting donations or driving them places or what have you, these many different things that you do. Again, I just thank you, and I know many have and will continue to thank you for taking a moment, these moments in your day, to post about these things and to make and hopefully bring awareness to them, so people can say, "Oh my goodness, that's terrible," but glad someone's helping this person. Thank you, Mark. Which more of this kind of thing was being done, and of course, not by you. You've got enough happening, but to really the encampments were the big example. Overall, it was in the news, right? It was, this is what these people are facing, minus 50. Oh my God. And hopefully, and that brought, again, not to make light of it, but it really brought attention to, and I keep using that word, where people, I think it really helped, as the stuff that you post, and for that matter, the coalition posts, as well as Avnish, to what's really happening out there. Frankly, you can't do this forever, what you're doing. Even though what you're doing is critical and absolutely necessary, it shouldn't be, but it is.
But the thing that I found the most disappointing was city council and government's complete lack of empathy and understanding of the issue. They took everything the police said as fact, and they didn't really experience or understand what was really going on with the situation. And on the other side, there was a whole group of people that were really supporting the actions that we were doing, and most of it was well-meaning. But again, there was people on the other side that were supposed to be like on our side, or the I shouldn't say our side, but the side of the people that were trying to help, who were just using it as a photo op. So there was a lot of I was really disappointed, particularly from city council. But I was also disappointed with some of the people that were supporting us, and just the way they were using this as a bullhorn for their issues or their perspective of what was really happening.
One of your latest tweets is, I have my notes over here. People are wondering. To quote you, in March, my spreadsheet states I worked with 86 clients. This included 5 babies, 9 elderly persons over 80 years old, 32 single moms, 14 single dads, 1 pregnant 13-year-old, 6 persons who are sexually exploited, 11 persons with severe mental health issues, and 8 homeless youth under 18. Many of these human beings have significant trauma and little means. So, tell me what that tweet means to you.
That means that to me, that's just an average month of the situation and the demographics of the people that I tried to help. It's very spread out, all sorts of ages and life experiences. And it just expresses, I think, a lot of that we have a lot of work to do before that sort of stat ever changes.
Is that an average month for you?
Yeah, that's pretty, that's really average.
Okay.
That's part and parcel with what we're dealing with and what I'm dealing with.
Because
When I
the
say
reason I
we at the
asked that
coalition,
is you had said back in January, I think, that this is the busiest you have ever been.
no, January's are very busy, and this January was particularly stressful and high needs. I think because of a lot of things, I think because of, I could probably say a lot of things. I think one of the things was those CERB payments. A lot of these people took
Right.
advantage of the CERB payments. So
That's long gone, but sure.
now they're having to pay it back,
Yeah.
and it's affecting them. And it was right after Christmas. So people are have that Christmas hangover or holiday season hangover where they've spent a lot of money on to celebrate the year and the new year.
So compared to March, how many? Can you give us a rough idea of numbers in terms of January, how that compares?
I think it was about 30% more in January.
Okay.
It was well over 100 people.
Okay. And they reach
Yeah.
out to you by text, by phone call. How do they contact you?
So usually people reach out through me through texting, through phone calls, and through Facebook or direct messages on social platforms.
Okay.
On occasion, an email. And if it's an email, usually it's an allied professional referring somebody to me because they can't get involved with it. That's usually how I'm contacted. It's a lot of it is, I'd say about 80% of it is cold calls, people that I've never worked with before, but a good 20 to 30 to 40%, depending on the month, are people that I've worked with in the past or continuing to work from last month to this month.
Is there are there specific cases or situations that you've been a part of where you've helped people, say, in the past month, the past couple of weeks here, that stand out to you that you want to share?
Yeah, I guess the 13-year-old pregnant girl, that would probably be the one that stands out to me the most this last month. And not that her situation is unique to mine, to my experiences. I've worked with many young youth that have been pregnant. The youngest I worked with was 11. But her case was involved a very sort of religious family that really added to the stigma that she was facing. She was very isolated in the sense that she wasn't able until, and actually I got a call from her pediatrician, not her OBGY or whatever you call them, but a pediatrician that was working with this 13-year-old to see if I could help with some of the social issues. And so that was very,
It's heartbreaking, but yeah.
it is, but there's a lot of hope. I think the goal, and I think what we exceeded, was finding some extended family members that were a bit more understanding of what it is to be 13 and being looking at the situation of being a mom in a few months,
Right.
being non-judgmental
Course.
about what she had gone through and what she was about to go through. But at the same time, being able to provide that sort of guidance and mentoring, parenting that she would need and support that she would need to be a child herself and thrive and play,
Right,
which is
yeah.
her right as a UN Rights of the Child. But at the same time, also of her being a mother. So that's probably the one that stands out the most.
Are there any others that you'd like to speak to that you can think of, or should I
Oh, if
go?
we had time, I could speak to all. How many was it? 85 of them? Yeah, I could speak to about.
85.
Again, everyone brings a di and I used to bring this sort of analogy when I was working a lot in youth court, is I would walk into a room with duty counsel and I would be speaking to the parents of a child who was just charged with murder.
Oh my God.
And these parents would be insoluble. They would be, wringing their hands, they would be under significant. They felt hopeless. They felt that this was the end of, that this was a life-changing event. And then I would leave that room and I would go around the corner into another room and I'd be speaking to another lawyer and their family, and their son or daughter had just been charged with stealing a chocolate bar. And what I noticed is that the same situation and the same feelings and the same emotions were with that family as were with the one that was charged with homicide.
Okay.
So the perspective is, if you're drowning in 2 feet of water or in 50 feet of water, you're still drowning.
Still drowning.
And if your child is in crisis and has made a bad choice or has taken an action that's harmed another person or done something wrong, you react to it. Again, if it's where I might think it's a very minor thing or a very serious thing, there's no, from the family's perspective, there's no difference. They're feeling the same amount of anxiety, they're feeling the same amount of hopelessness, they're feeling the same sort of confusion. And they're thinking that it's going to impact their child in a strange way, but in a similar way. And I learned from there into my role now is that everybody's situation, regardless of how I might think is a very serious or somewhat minimal, it doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. From the perspective of the people that I'm working with, that emotion, that anxiety, that feeling of hopelessness is the same regardless of the situation that they're facing. And the other thing I've learned and I understand is that I'm dealing with a lot of people that have a lot of a paranoia associated with what's going on in their lives. And sometimes people would say, oh, that's just somebody with a tinfoil hat. And it may very well be, but you have to understand that their emotions and their feelings,
It's rooted in something, right?
even if it's not, you have to understand
Well,
that
they're
they're
like
still
they're yeah.
experiencing their those emotions and those feelings, and you need to address those emotions and feelings, because no one is going to su succeed having that sort of anxiety and that
Right.
sort of weight on their shoulders. I hate using cliches, but yeah. But that's a situation that I think people really may not appreciate, is that our judgment of somebody is irrelevant and inconsequential. It's how they're feeling, it's what their perspective is, and trying to address their feelings and changing their perspective of themselves is the challenge and what I try to do.
Okay, well said. All right,
Yeah.
a couple of examples here. Much of which one, I guess, only so much time. So, which one you want to address is up to you. And I'm looking over here because of my notes. I'll try to summarize this, and you can just pick one if you like. In one tweet, you said, "This morning, I helped a refugee complete a claim. The family had been, you used the word butchered by Al-Shabaab. I think that's how you say that in Somalia, is what you told me, and I did post the updated version of for clarity." And his life had been threatened, but he managed to flee. And it sounded like bribe officials to get his way out of that country. You've since updated that, and I noticed that you were helping him again complete the claim, or that process had progressed. Maybe you want to address that. And then you have
Yeah.
another one here. Says, "I'm at a child welfare intake office with a young person who just turned 16, and the young person's kokum, grandmother, right?"
Yeah.
"We are trying to get a file open as the young person is not safe with the legal guardian due to domestic violence and substance use. The young person's fa biological father was murdered, and a biological mom is on the streets, whereabouts unknown." And I remember the photo that you accompanied with that. So you could address either one of those possibly. Unless there's something else in the
Yeah,
story that comes to
I think what so let me talk about the refugee claim, because there's a lot of misconceptions. There's a lot of misconceptions about everything. And so sometimes I have the misconceptions, by the way. But the window I was looking out of, I've saw a young man who was really traumatized by the environment that he was living in and the complete lack of feeling safe for his whole life. And understanding that there's a lot of pushback and there's a lot of visceral hate towards people that are trying to come into our country, which is ironic because the only we're all here as immigrants and refugees, except for our First Nations peoples. But I think we need to understand that Canada has to be a haven, that we live in one world, not in 257 countries, at least from my perspective. We live in one world. And but for the grace of God, my situation is a lot different from that young man's. And for him to see his family butchered by Al-Shabaab, and then trying to be recruited as a child soldier. And it wasn't just like he left his village and ran away and went into one of the larger cities within the Horn of Africa, whether that be Nairobi or wherever. It's they were texting him, they were calling him, they were threatening to kill more of his family if he didn't join. His whole feeling of fear was entrenched. And justifiably. So for me to walk with him to actually fill out the refugee claim, to attend his first hearing, to support him like that, it was very fulfilling to see that stamp, bang, here's your work, here's your healthcare clearance so you can get a healthcare number, here's your documentations so you can get a social insurance number and start working. and we'll be in touch. And it was a really good feeling. And I don't know if I'll be having to work with him ever again
How
because
old
I
is he?
think he's 20. And I'm not sure how he got into the country, but that's regardless, he's here
Yes.
and he needed protection. And at least from my perspective, he can't go back.
Yeah. So
And this was.
just to reassure people a little bit here, you had told me that clearly he made it in the country, and that's fine. We don't know how. We don't care. He's here. But he found the Somalian community, I believe is what you said, in Edmonton, and then they pointed him in your direction.
Yeah, no, I've worked very collaboratively with the Somalian community. I shouldn't say, people think of the Somalians as in Somaliland or Somalia within that little country, but really, that's a colonial border. You're talking about people from the Horn of Africa, and whether we identify them as Sudanese or Somalian or Ethiopian or Eritrean or Tutsi or whatever, it's irrelevant. But yeah, that community reached out to me, and I was more than happy to help.
Okay, so you said you walked into to the an office, a government office, I gather, to fill out
Yeah, the
this
Pink
claim.
Palace, Canada Place. Yeah.
And what's the update on that? How are things going?
Good. He, like I said, we ended the day where he got a health care number and a social insurance number, and he was going to go look for a job
Okay.
and go get his toothache fixed. To the government's credit, it's very quick and a simple process to get those documents. And I was really pleasantly surprised.
Okay.
And there wasn't a lot of haggling or advocacy involved. It was just somebody that obviously was fearful of his life and was granted interim refugee status. He still has to go through a hearing, but and he might ask me to support him in that or help him get a lawyer or something like that. But yeah, I
Very
think it was
brave,
a good
very
outcome.
overall, and not only am I taking this the wrong way, but a very brave young man.
Oh yeah, but he'd either be a very brave young man
Or
or
very
he would
dead,
be a
yeah.
dead. Yeah, that's the way I saw it. So
You talk about the difficulties with child welfare quite a bit. So, in particular to this story, and I'll quote it again. You said, "I am at a child welfare intake office with a young person who just turned 16 and the young person's cook-em. We are trying to get a file open as the young person is not safe with their legal guardian due to domestic violence and substance use. The young person's biological father was murdered, and the biological mom is on the streets, whereabouts unknown." And you end with, "The youth and I discussed options. The youth now feels hopeless and filled with anxiety given child welfare's lack of empathy or concern. I tell the youth, I've got your back, and we'll continue to, for her right to be safe." So maybe you can speak a little
yeah.
bit to that, and maybe a little bit to child welfare.
Yeah, child welfare is right now, it's a sorry state. It's a very, at least I think most Albertans, if they understood what was going on with child welfare, they'd find it they're not living up to their legislation and their mandate, and they're not serving Albertans well at this time. I think they're more focused on just being navigators as opposed to actually intervention workers. And in that case specifically, I had to send a snarky email to the managers of Children's Services because after that meeting, we were expecting child welfare to start an investigation. And that 16-year-old and that cook-em has to date still not heard back from child welfare. So it's a very stressful situation for this family. And this is something that I was actively involved with yesterday. And I'll probably get an update from the family either tonight or tomorrow in regards to seeing if child welfare has started investigating. Because you see, this took place, I think, the last week of February.
Right.
At least I don't know when I tweeted about it, but it took place in the last week of February. And child welfare has 40 some days to complete an investigation. And we're in our late 30s now. We're almost 30 some days into this. And the family still hasn't been contacted yet, at least as of yesterday. So that in itself speaks how pathetic child welfare is and has become, that they're not They're not engaged with Albertans. They don't have Albertans' backs. They're more focused, at least in my personal opinion, about their budget, about not becoming involved, particularly with youth and teens. And they're downloading their responsibilities on a bunch of nonprofit agencies or on families with, you can go to this resource if you need help, or that resource if you need help, or this resource. And they give them pamphlets with phone numbers or handwritten numbers on the back of their business cards, but they don't even give out their email addresses anymore. That is how pathetic child welfare is. They do not give out their email addresses to Albertans anymore because they're building a wall around themselves. And I think they want to, I hope, but it's almost like they want to exist on paper, but nothing more. And I've had a meeting with the minister. I've expressed my issues and my concerns to him. And he's been like most other ministers, smiles a lot, nods a lot. Yes, Marcus, nothing moves a dial. And I think it's because ministers are really, they're almost like governor generals of of these departments, because they're more symbolic. I think it's the ADMs, the assistant deputy ministers and deputy ministers, that are actually making the decisions and doing policy. There are exceptions, and I think that the best child welfare minister I ever met was Manmeet Buller, who used to be a youth worker and just really understood and was a strong advocate for children and youth. And he moved the age back to 20 to 24 from 22 to continue supporting youth to that age. And tragically, he died in a car accident while he was trying to help somebody else.
Another general topic I wanted to touch on here. You talk quite a bit about going to the Edmonton Remand Center. Any thoughts on your experiences with that?
It's a maximum security jail with a lot of rules, but the officers that I deal with and the security I deal with, they're really professional, and a lot of them that I have come into interactions with have been very accommodating to make sure that I have access to the clients there. So,
Okay. You're saying, let's be real. If the government was doing their job, there may not be as much of a need for what I do. We're having a fundraising gala at the River Cree on May 2nd. And just to sum it all up, can you please promote that a little bit? Talk about the upcoming fundraiser.
yes, I'm not reliant on government funding directly or indirectly. I depend on people. Like people that are watching this podcast or listening to this podcast, and I depend on donations. I'm having my first gala. It's at the River Cree on May 2nd. And if you go to our website, the coalition with the number 4, or I'm sure you'll post a link, you'll see how to purchase a ticket, or you might want to purchase a ticket that I could donate to somebody. So it's really important that people support the work that we do if they like what we're doing or
It's,
like what I'm doing.
I'd say it's critical. It's how you're able to do the work you're doing, period.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. No, but this gala is on May 2nd at the
Yes.
River Cree, and a lot of people have been putting a lot of work into it, and I'm really excited about it, and I hope people take a chance to look at it and maybe get involved in it. And if not, if that's not their thing, then please feel free to donate. You get a tax receipt. Like I said, we're a federally registered charity. And unlike a lot of charities, 40 or 20 or 80% of our budget does not go on promotions and infrastructure. It goes directly to the clients through the work that I'm doing or through financial supports. So
Okay.
it's not getting whittled away on administrative costs and promotions and
Yeah.
office space and that. Liberty Law gives me free office space. So again, those sorts of things allow us to put more resources directly towards the client or support us to work with the client.
I'll also add that it's not just money that you're looking to have donated, but you've talked about cell phones
Oh
unlocked.
yeah.
Yeah.
That's a whole different podcast. And
Is it?
that's I think we
Okay.
could spend a whole podcast chatting about that one. But
Well,
yeah,
just to
items
mention,
is too. And maybe
yeah,
you look at episode 2 or episode 3,
sure, yeah,
see how they
okay,
help us on that
perfect.
one.
Love to. We'll do that, Mark. But yeah, cell phones unlocked, hopefully factory reset. I'll leave it at that. As well as you've talked about things like diapers and just essential items that people that your clients, that people you're helping need. How would they get those to you?
Just to reach out to me. to start off with, because I only have small office space and I have specific things that I need. I always need cell phones. You can either drop them off, I could pick them up, or you can mail them.
Mail them. Okay. And they'd reach out to you to get that address.
Yeah, or if you just look, yeah,
Okay.
reach out to me at either, but or you can mail them to Mark Charrington, care of Liberty Law,
Okay.
and just Google Liberty Law and you get the whole
Liberty Law.
address there.
Liberty
It's
Law.
in Edmonton.
Fair
Yeah,
enough.
not in North Carolina, because
Yeah,
they'll wonder what the hell are we getting these, who's this Mark guy and why are we getting these phones? But yeah, there's
I take it
Liberty
that's
Law in
happened.
Edmonton.
Yeah. And I know they have a branch office in Grand Prairie as well, but you want the stuff coming into
Yeah,
Edmonton.
yeah, yeah,
Yeah,
yeah.
yeah. I'll get you to mention your a little bit about your social media accounts and your newsletter if you would.
So you can find me on Twitter, on Instagram, on Mastodon,
Threads there, yeah.
Patreon,
Actually,
and it's
we're going to move things over to the news over to Beehive. We just it's that Patreon isn't quite doing what we want, but that would be the last move because I know we were on Substack before that, and we're just not comfortable being on Substack. But Patreon isn't working, so move it over to Beehive. Leave it at Beehive. We'll promote that when that's ready to go. And we're loving your Instagram videos, so please do more of those.
Yeah. I will. I will. I will.
Awesome. Thank you for your time, Mark. It has been a true pleasure and a privilege to help you in any way that I can, including with this podcast. And I can't wait for people to hear it, to watch it, to learn more about you, the coalition, and your unbelievably important work.
No, and thanks, Kevin, for reaching out to me about all this. So, yeah.
we'll look forward to the gala. We'll look forward to other things that are coming up that you can't talk about yet. And of course, your continued efforts to help those who need it. So, thank you, Mark. It's been a pleasure. We'll talk again, I guess, in a couple of weeks or as soon as you can. Enjoy your weekend and keep fighting the good fight, as they say, man.
Okay, you have a great weekend too, Kevin.
All right. Take care, Mark.
Okay, bye.
Bye. Just a quick point of clarification. At the end of my conversation with Mark during this first episode of his podcast, I mentioned I'm moving his free newsletter over to another service called Beehive. This only applies to his newsletter. Patreon subscribers will have early access to his podcast episodes, and a few days later, it'll be publicly available for everybody else on Patreon and on YouTube. If you subscribe to Mark's free newsletter over on Substack, where it was first hosted, no further editions will be published there due to recent controversial things and decisions they've made over there. Mark is no longer comfortable using Substack or supporting them, and frankly, neither am I. Please consider becoming a Patreon subscriber for $7.50 a month, or $5 US with the exchange rate, and the newsletter, but there'll always be the free version available a few days later. You can find links to all of the things Mark is doing, and some of the things, of course, I'm helping him with, over at markcharrington.ca. That's markcharrington.ca. That'll do it for this inaugural episode of the Mark Charrington Podcast. Thank you for joining us.